Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There's a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. This is the Entrepreneur Architect Podcast, episode 62. Welcome back to the Entrepreneur Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage, and this is the podcast dedicated to a successful life as a small firm architect. Whether you have plans to someday start your own firm, you're in the process of launching a startup, or you might be an experienced small firm architect just trying to make a difference, this podcast is for you. My goal is to inspire you to build a better business so that you may pursue your purpose with passion and live the life of your dreams. This week on the Entrepreneur Architect Podcast, I have a very special guest for you. He's a friend of mine and a rising star in the profession. Elected as the current president of the American Institute of Architecture Students in December of 2013, I met this man at a small reception following my speech at that organization's annual convention in Chicago, and within minutes of meeting him, I knew that he would be elected the next day as the president of AIAS, and he would go on to do great things for the profession. Well, as president of AIAS, Charlie Kletcha is in the process of doing great things, and I am so excited to see where his journey leads, and I am happy to share his story with you here today on the Entrepreneur Architect Podcast. This episode of the Entrepreneur Architect Podcast is brought to you by Entrepreneur Architect Academy, a community of like-minded architects seeking to take their small firms to greater success. And membership at Entrepreneur Architect Academy includes a live weekly video conference where the members and I meet each week to discuss a specific topic of business, leadership, or life. And we work together to help each other build better businesses and be better architects. And it also includes a private membership community where during the week, members post and communicate and share information in a very protected forum. Members receive free access to all the products offered by Entrepreneur Architect now and into the future for as long as they're members of the Academy. And in 2015, we are planning on 10 new video courses, so don't miss out on that. And there's going to be much, much more as Entrepreneur Architect Academy grows. So if you're interested, learn more at entrearchitect.com/academy. Charlie Kletcha, welcome to the Entrepreneur Architect Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Mark. Glad to be here.
It's great having you here. You're the current president of the American Institute of Architecture Students. We first met when I attended AIAS Forum in 2013 in Chicago, just a little bit over a year ago. I was invited to speak at the General Assembly, and I met many of the architecture student leaders there and was really excited to meet them, and I was so inspired by being there. I love Forum and what it does to the people who attend there. That was where you were elected, so that was exciting to see that happen. And then we met again last summer in Chicago. Again, you had your team, after you've been elected, you had your team sort of doing a planning retreat, and you had a small reception, invited me over. So that was exciting again to meet up again and talk. And I learned a little bit about your story and where you've come from, and it's a really interesting story. So why don't you share your origin story? Tell us sort of your journey to get to where you are today.
Yeah, absolutely. It has been an interesting one for me as well. I was actually interested in architecture as a kid, but kind of took another path going into my undergrad. Started as an engineer first, and then transferred to the theater program at the University of Michigan, where I ended up doing a degree in performing arts, lighting design, and stage management. Toward the end of that degree program, I proposed an independent study coming back around to architecture. I wanted to design a set of plans for a performing arts center, and that got me into some conversations with the School of Architecture at Michigan, which is where I found out there was such a thing as a three-year MArch for a non-architecture undergrad. So I took some time off and worked. I had a bit of a freelance career in performing arts for a while and production, and then dove in headfirst and jumped into a 3.5-year master's at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago. About a year into that program, I ended up getting involved with the AIAS. As is often the case, one of my elder peers kind of tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Hey, I think this is something you should get involved in." And I listened because I was offered a free t-shirt and some pizza, and that was enough to get me involved. And then when I actually started participating, I realized how great the payoff was in terms of the energy put in and the sort of connections and benefits that come out of active engagement. And so after attending my very first forum in 2012, I came back the following year to run for office, and just jumped straight in and ran for president and was elected. And so the following July, so July of 2014, I, just having graduated, moved straight off to D.C. and have been working ever since full-time with the AIS as both the national president, chairman of the board, and a full-time employee.
Yeah, the t-shirt and pizza will do it every time.
It's often the hook that gets people involved.
But. Yeah, I was AIAS president, chapter president at Roger Williams in 92. Mm-hmm. Graduated in 93, but I was president in 92. And that's how I grew my chapter. It was a pretty small chapter, and I promised everybody pizza, free pizza, you know, and we used the budget to buy pizza. And I got a whole bunch of people to show up every week. And, you know, once they were there, they were excited about what we were doing. And they stuck around for what we were doing. And it wasn't so much about the pizza and the t-shirts anymore.
Yep. As long as that's just the bait and there's more substance to it. I'm fine with whatever gets people in the door and gets them listening. Yeah.
And you talked a little bit about your theater background and the technology. And you're a rock and roll guy, right? So...
Yep.
Tell us a little bit about that story too, because that's interesting and how that might have led to where you are today as well.
Yeah, that was an interesting little tangent in my professional career. So a friend of mine from the theater school ended up going on to produce some theater. I worked with him as a lighting designer and stage manager, and then later went on to start a band and got signed to Atlantic Records, and called me up one day and asked, he basically said, "You seem organized and I could tolerate living on a bus with you for 8 weeks. Do you want to be our tour manager?" To which I naturally said, "Yes, of course." And then hung up the phone and Googled what a tour manager does, because I had no idea what I had just signed up for. But yeah, so I've gone on a handful of national tours with that band. And the way I basically described that job was they played music for an hour a day and the other 23 hours were my job. So from coordinating travel and lodging to managing press and managing the technical details of the venues. It was quite a fascinating experience.
And how long did you do that?
8 to 10 weeks at a time. I think I did two or three national tours with them, including the Warped Tour, which is one of these big kind of festival dozen stages parking lot tours. So a very interesting range of experiences through that.
What was the name of the band?
It's called I Fight Dragons. They're a band out of Chicago. Just released a new album on vinyl that they backed by Kickstarter. That was overwhelmingly successful.
Oh, very cool. What kind of music is it? What is it compared to?
They call it chiptune rock. So it's pop rock, very catchy. The kids these days love it. they employ 8-bit audio, so the old kind of nostalgic retro audio from Nintendo and Atari. Yeah. They actually play that as an instrument in the band.
Cool.
They do some fun stuff.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. That sounds like an exciting part of your life.
It was. I wouldn't change a thing. I've had some really interesting and exciting opportunities.
So why didn't you continue on that path? Because you veered off that path and came back to architecture. What was the catalyst for that?
I wouldn't say I've entirely given up on that path. I kind of take opportunities as they come. By the time I started doing that in a significant capacity, I'd already started thinking pretty seriously about grad school and about a career in architecture, and was just, yeah, sort of taking the opportunities as they came. I had about 3 years off in between undergrad and grad school, those opportunities helped kind of fill the gap while I was doing all kinds of other random day jobs, paying off a little bit of the student loan debt, and really making sure architecture was what I wanted to do before I dove into it. Because coming from a theater degree, I knew that architecture was liable to be a pretty time and labor intensive academic endeavor relative to the somewhat less rigorous theater career I had before that.
Yeah, yeah. I would guess that someday those two paths will merge. And much of your future will be involved in that.
I imagine they will. It's at first I thought it to be quite a disconnect, but it was actually several friends that helped me kind of understand how closely tied those two backgrounds are. The idea of theater and kind of the experiential design of space and the spatial environment. Lighting being kind of a very technical subject, but with a very aesthetic finished product, very similar to how I view architecture. So, I think it's they're all kind of symptoms of the same deep-rooted interest. So,
yeah,
I see them being entwined throughout my career.
Yeah, and I'm one for encouraging architects to do something, you know, beyond the traditional architecture studio, mm-hmm. you know, and take everything that you do and everything that you are and do something unique, you know, mm-hmm. add something different and interesting to the world, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So yeah, it'll be interesting to see where you go. So let's get back to AIAS.
Sure.
There are a bunch of changes there recently. You have a new executive director, Nick Surface.
Yep, we sure do.
He was formerly the assistant director at NCARB.
Mm-hmm. Director of internship and education. Yeah.
Right. So he was involved in AIAS before,
yeah.
And I actually met him the same time I met you at that same reception at Forum. After I spoke, we were invited to a reception afterwards, and I met you there and your wife, mm-hmm. And Nick was there as well, and so I met with Nick as well,
mm-hmm.
And I spoke to him a few episodes back, episode 50. We talked mm-hmm. about AIAS and his plans. So tell us a little bit what your plans are for AIAS and what you're planning on doing there.
Well, it's, you know, naturally it's evolved a little bit over the course of my term, about halfway through now. But it's always had a lot to do with really celebrating the professional development and kind of leadership training aspects of the AIAS that sometimes get a little lost. As you know, that the pizza and t-shirts angle sometimes gets us a little tied down to the social kind of fellowship and community building aspects, which are incredibly valuable in of themselves. But there's so much that happens organically in terms of network building and leadership training. Really, the the students who run these local chapters at schools are, in essence, running a small nonprofit organization. So they're running a board of directors. They're writing agendas and planning meetings and setting strategic visions and planning a budget and often interacting with administrators at several different levels. So it really is something we've never really told the story of in a compelling or effective way. So my overarching goal for the organization for my year at least is really to learn how to celebrate that and to bring to the fore more of those opportunities to really advance your career, to establish DAIS as a valuable credential, something that you don't just put on your resume because you know, tantamount to being in student council, but something that actually means that you've gone above and beyond the minimum requirements to sort of set yourself apart among your peers.
Yeah, I love that. I love that that you're bringing the sort of the cachet of being a member of AIAS, and I love that you're pointing out that the student leaders who are running these organizations are running small businesses.
Yeah.
And that's certainly, you know, that's my mission is to wake everybody up in the architecture world that as architects we need to know how to run businesses, and so to be doing that as students, because the architecture schools don't have time to be teaching. That's mm-hmm. that's basically the answer when I ask architecture schools why they're not teaching any mm-hmm. sort of business. They're doing a little bit of professional practice work, and some mm-hmm. schools have entrepreneur sort of bents and some courses. But if it was my, if I could change the world, I would mm-hmm. be teaching every architect how to run a successful mm-hmm. small business. And so to have the AIAS, not only that's part of being the student leader to run these chapters, but to point it out and to encourage that is really great to hear that.
Yeah. And that's kind of the opportunities, not only sort of pointing out how it already happens just by virtue of the structure of the organization, but providing more of those opportunities. Because as you mentioned, there are very few schools who really capitalize on or offer opportunities in the business of architecture. So we've started conversations with groups like the Society for Design Administration and trying to work with them to offer our members access to, resources to, if that's, within your wheelhouse, within your interest or skill set, to lean toward the business side or prepare yourself for the business side of architecture. We want to be able to offer those opportunities where the school may not necessarily offer that. So those types of resources, that type of supplemental education that can help bridge the gap from education to practice, that's what I feel is a huge benefit of membership and something that we can really promote.
Yeah, I love that. Mm-hmm. Also, one of the things that I really liked when I was in Chicago, other than the fact that it brought me back to being a kid again, mm-hmm. Is just the inspiration of being there, being in that big room with 1,000 enthusiastic, optimistic architecture students, mm-hmm. is so it gets you so pumped up. And I think that there should be some formal way for that energy from architecture students to be merged with the maturity and the knowledge of the professionals, and to bring them together literally in the same space mm-hmm. at that large scale for things like that to happen, because that doesn't really happen. I mean, the AIAS is invited to the convention, and they have a couple of little things that happen over there so they can say that they're involved, but I would love to see one big room full of architects and architecture students mm-hmm. Banging away and being loud like Forum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really, I think just about every professional or sort of, outside perspective that's come to one of those events has had that same reaction. It's just such an inspiring experience, such a just infectiously energetic group. And I don't think it's like the enthusiasm of naivety. I think it's a genuine sort of optimism, a genuine notion that we can change the world through what we do, you know, and we're going to take advantage of
everything. Yeah, I agree. I don't think that it's immaturity. Mm-hmm. I think it's pure optimism, and it's something that I think all architects still have as they grow older. Mm-hmm. But I think that because the real world gets in their way and the profession sort of doesn't really encourage that so much, mm-hmm. That it gets sort of pushed down it's still inside, but it's not at the surface. Mm-hmm. And when you go to an event like that, it sort of just comes out. And that's why I would love to see some sort of more formal engagement between mm-hmm. the two groups. So architects can be reminded how they really feel. Because mm-hmm. architects are naturally optimists.
It's true. Yeah, and we're always looking for more opportunities for that, for, you know, inviting more professionals just to join us, if not to actively participate for Forum, just so they can see, you know, kind of what it is we're all about, to have a more significant presence at convention every year, and to find those opportunities where maybe, you know, it's a conversation we're having with the IA is how can we sort of overlap or integrate or coordinate our, especially the leadership training programming. You know, AIA has grassroots as a leadership training conference. We have our summer grassroots as a leadership training conference. So maybe there's some room for this to happen together and develop, you know, not only those kind of informal and organic mentorship relationships, but yeah, really give a chance for that optimism to sort of flow out from our group and help recharge the one above us.
Yeah. Are there any formal connections between AIA and AIAS now that is trying to do something like that?
Yeah, it's really an ongoing conversation. I mean, we're headquartered. My office is in their building, so we have conversations with them literally daily. But especially in the last few years, the relationship has really become a lot more collaborative, a lot more one of open dialogue. We're actually just around the corner from the Emerging Professionals Group, the Center for Emerging Professionals at the AIA. So there's pretty constant kind of back and forth about things that we can be doing together, things that we can help each other with. Our social media and communications staff are always kind of going back and forth and sharing ideas. So it kind of runs the full gamut from very formal partnerships to the really sort of organic on the fly. Let's help you promote this. Let's see where this idea goes. It's really, and I would say that with all the collaterals, because ACSA is also in the building. The NAB is also just down the street, and NCARB, of course, especially in recent years, and totally unrelated to the fact that we stole Nick from them, has been a fantastic supporter of ours, which stands to reason. You know, we are sort of the future generation of the profession, so we want to help them, you know, promote their mission, and likewise, they support what we're doing to educate young professionals.
Right. What you had mentioned earlier that sort of your mission was to bring this professional development mm-hmm. to the students. What are you doing specifically to mm-hmm. make that happen?
Well, this spring we've actually got a pretty solid and pretty jam-packed slate of new programming, in addition to a lot of the things we're already doing. We have some new initiatives. Some of them are still in development, but one is essentially a scholarship fund that we're working to set up, basically contacting kind of our professional network, both in the organization world and in the professional world, soliciting donations to establish the scholarship fund that would reimburse AIAS members who sit for an ARE within 1 year of graduating and pass. If they can pass an exam within a year of graduating as an AIS member and submit that pass, they get reimbursed for that test. There's still a lot to figure out logistically on that. Can you apply for multiple, you know, things like that. But we essentially want to help encourage folks to commit to making a plan and stick to it. Just get started. And it doesn't mean, you know, you have to sit for all seven in the first year, but you know, it's really just not allowing time or life to sort of get in the way and mm-hmm. and keep pushing that start date back. I've found that really, and this was even true with IDP for me, getting past that zero barrier, you know, just getting those first couple hours logged and getting familiar with what it's like to do that, made a huge difference and made it so much easier to get rolling. And likewise, just sitting for that first exam and knowing how to study and where the resources are and how to get a mentor and how to get a supervisor and, you know, where to turn for that sort of help, makes a huge difference. So actually as a part of the campaign to help launch the scholarship fund for the AIAS, we're doing something called the 7 and 7 campaign, where I've committed to taking all seven exams in a week, in probably May, tentatively scheduled for May, seven exams in 7 days. And I'll be blogging throughout the spring on, what study materials I'm using, you know, what resources are available, who I'm talking to, kind of just how it's going, you know, even down to like the paperwork, how to find out what you need to do in your state or in your jurisdiction to sit for the exam. So that's a big one. We're also doing something, it's kind of a partnership with the AA and with NCARB, that will become sort of a network of firms that we've sort of evaluated as being supportive of developing young professionals. So the firms that help provide study materials for the ARE, or that will you know, pay for an ARE if you pass, or will give you time off to take the exams, you know, without penalizing you, that provide mentorship opportunities that actively help you get through IDP and not just sort of when you ask for it, they'll sign off. We'd like to build a network of these firms, both so that we can direct our members toward the firms we know they have a good chance of succeeding, and so that that those firms are given kind of a competitive edge in attracting the talent that we provide, but also as a means of gaining feedback from the profession on what we can be doing better to prepare people. Things like business and communications and even graphic design. If there are areas where the profession sees consistently room to improve in young professionals, we want to be, you know, the agile organization that can provide those resources and sort of fill the gap. So we really see it as sort of a win-win across the board, for our organization, for the firms, for the members. It's really just making those connections, which is so much of what entering the profession is about, is making those connections.
Yeah, and it sounds like if you could get all of those programs up and running and becoming a part of being an AIAS member, that the pizza and the t-shirts won't be needed anymore, because it'll just be part of the process of becoming an architect, that you go to architecture school, you become an AIAS member, mm-hmm. and that's part of your education, yep. that is the piece that fills in the gaps that the schools and the profession aren't providing.
Yep.
The AIAS can facilitate other organizations to help those like my organization, Entrepreneur Architect, the things that I'm presenting to architecture, to architects, certainly can also be presented to architecture students. So you and I should talk.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Continue to talk.
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely.
So what about you personally? What's your plan once you get the weight off your shoulders of running the world of architecture students?
Right.
What do you have plans for your future after you're done there?
Yeah. So I'm actually headed back to my hometown of Detroit. My wife just started a tenure track position at Wayne State University in downtown Detroit. So we've bought a home in Detroit. And after my term is up in July with the AIS, I'll be returning to Detroit. As I said, I hopefully by that point will have passed at least a majority of the seven AREs. So the next step will be finishing out the IDP, taking any exams that I don't happen to pass on the first run. Yeah, really just getting the experience of practice. I went straight from graduate school into this position, and while it's been an amazing experience and built an incredible network, it isn't design. It's project management and it's administration and all sorts of wonderful business experience. But I do kind of miss the design, so I'm excited to get back in and sort of start back at the bottom and work my way up through the bathroom details and staircases and see where practice goes. There's a handful of firms in Detroit that I've got my eye on and looking to set up meetings soon to start just kind of building that connection.
Yeah.
I'll also get involved with the AIA in Detroit. AIA Detroit and AIA Michigan are both here. So looking forward to kind of continuing the path. I don't see my position now is in any way terminal. It's really just the beginning of a career of involvement.
Right. Right. Any entrepreneurism in your long-term future? You ever imagine that you'd start your own firm?
It's certainly a distinct possibility. I think there are a lot of areas of interest that could lead that way. That was never my plan in the past, but there's something about the experiences I've had in the last handful of years that have made that more and more of a possibility.
Yeah, I mean, with your unique background, there's probably not too many firms that are doing what you could do with your knowledge and your background that you could start your own thing and be really successful doing it.
Yeah, that's true. And if I decide to go that way, I know Entrepreneur Architect has a number of resources that I could use to leverage those interests.
Yeah, no doubt.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been great. It's been great speaking with you again. And
my pleasure.
Learning a little bit about what you're doing at AIAS and to learning a little bit more about you personally. I think your story is a really inspiring one and very interesting to hear. And so thanks for being with me today.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
And
always talking to you.
And we'll continue the conversation.
Sounds good.
All right.
Sounds like a plan.
All right. Thanks for being with me.
Absolutely. Thanks, Mark.
If you liked this episode or any other episode that you may have heard here at the Entrepreneur Architect Podcast, please go to iTunes and leave me a review, because this is how you may help me spread the word about Entrepreneur Architect and our mission to become an influential force in this profession. Please go to entrearchitect.com/iTunes, or if you find yourself in iTunes and searching around, just search for Entrepreneur Architect and you'll find me there. And just a reminder about Entrepreneur Architect Academy, this is a group that you want to belong to. So check it out, entrearchitect.com/academy. If you have any questions about it, go to the site and send me an email from entrearchitect.com. You can hit the contacts button up top. Send me an email if you have any questions about it. I'd love to have you join us and be part of our group. So that's a wrap on today's show. The show notes and a direct link to download this episode of the show may be found at entrearchitect.com/episode62. And my name is Mark R. LePage, and I am an entrepreneur architect. I hope to see you next week. Thank you very much for listening. Have a good one.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure. And when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark Arlepage, founder of Entre Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.